Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell. My guests today are the co-founders of a company called Ping. That's spelled P, exclamation point, NG, a robotics-powered coffee drive-thru that fits in 120 square feet, makes your drink in under 30 seconds, and was built to kill the line, kill the small talk, and give you back your morning. Rob Witten is a West Point graduate and former robotics leader at Amazon and iRobot. Jane Lowe is a brand strategist and Booth MBA whose background in global customer experience runs through Forrester and Shark Ninja. Together, they're going after the $50 billion coffee industry, replacing slow, high overhead brick and mortar with autonomous robotic pods. Rob and Jane, appreciate you taking the time to jump on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to be here.
Opportunity, yeah.
Rob, let's just start. Right. How did this whole Ping start? I know, obviously, you mentioned your daughters in the car and complaining about drive-thrus, but let's actually dive deep into, okay, there's a problem, I have a solution, but, you know, we're going from Amazon, iRobot, Shark Ninja. I mean, those are some pretty big companies to being like, you know what? Maybe let's create this pod drive-through robot coffee making type store, if you will. Walk us through that timeline.
You know, it's really funny because in a lot of ways, I think we believe that our lives and careers have kind of led up to this moment, right? So you know, it's almost hard to put your finger on, you know, one particular moment, but you know, I've been a foodie for a long time, and I've always, since iRobot, I really enjoyed automation, robotics. That's where, you know, once you get into that super tangible realm of you design something, the next day you get to test it, and then it breaks, and then you fix it, and then you test it, and then it works, you know, that's such an amazing experience. And so for me, I've wanted to put those things together for a long time. I did a food truck at one point. My original idea was to do a robot breakfast sandwich machine. That was the original concept. And I ended up doing the food truck just to learn about doing a startup and starting a business and the food service industry and that sort of thing. But, you know, so all those things have been kind of cultivating back there. And then when we had those experiences in the drive-thrus, and I would be whinging, as Jane says now, right? You know, I'd be complaining about these drives because they're so inefficient. They're we both can't stand inefficiency. It drives us nuts. And the way we look at it is these are big, you know, restaurants and stores that just don't really care as much about the customer experience, right? They're not investing in it. The drive-thrus fundamentally haven't changed in over 70 years. So we saw this huge opportunity to create this amazing experience that just fits super well with our backgrounds. And that's how it really started coming to be. And, you know, we're pretty good at bouncing ideas off of each other. So Jane was saying, we could do kind of the coffee shops that you see out west, you know, where it's just a little pull-in shed sort of thing. And I thought it was cool, but I didn't really want to, you know, run a super heavy, you know, entry level labor type thing. I enjoy working with engineers and, you know, with, you know, people that are more invested, I think, in the business, you know, where they're looking to have more of a career as opposed to a job and, you know, have true ownership in things. And so that's how we ended up creating Ping is we look at this as just this amazing, potential for, you know, people to not only own our pods, but also to be able to work on them, to grow within the business. So, yeah, kind of all those things are really what came together to push us towards, all right, we need to do a fully automated, you know, system that creates this experience.
And Jane, were you on board from the beginning, you know, when this idea comes up and says, hey, let's create this? What were your thoughts? What was going on in your head when Rob said, this is what we need to do?
Yeah, I think we came to that conclusion together.
We did, yeah.
Because, it was sitting in the drive-thrus, but then we also did a ton of research around the industry itself. And we could kind of see. My last job was at Forrester Research as a data analyst for customer experience. And I worked with a lot of Fortune 500 clients working on improving their customer experience. Yeah. And I just knew that even if a company is well-resourced and had good intentions, like they just can't move the needle on customer experience. Like once you're entrenched, super hard. Like you look at McDonald's, I think they're very innovative. They're always searching for tech solutions. They actually played around with, voice ordering, using AI for voice ordering. They could only get it to 80% accuracy. And I think that's just like, I think it's like a little bit of, even with the right culture in place, they're not like a technology company, right? They're trying to eat technology. Mm-hmm. But I think that when you build it from the ground up as a tech company, that the innovation can take us there. But yeah, like I think it was just like finally at the point in my career where I was just like, you know, actually, I don't really think that most people know what they're doing. Like once you've like found that formula for success, like you keep just doing that and they're just so risk adverse. So that's what we get to do is play around a lot with what makes customers happy.
Mm. And Rob, what you said, I think is very interesting that you got a food truck to learn the industry. Because what I see a lot when it comes to robotics and a lot of these autonomous type machines, you know, we just had the National Restaurant Show in Chicago a few weeks back. And I mean, robots were everywhere from delivery. There were random coffee making robots. There's obviously the fry making ones and the burger making ones. But what I usually see is that it's always just tech driven and they have no food background. So they don't really understand how the industry works. And those companies, I always find a year later, 2 years, they go bankrupt. They don't because they don't realize the full picture of the food industry, that it is hospitality, whether in your beverage or you're in food, that you have to have that component to the whole piece and that, you know, automation is here to help us and solve certain problems. And I really like how you delved into that to learn the whole gambit of the food industry and like what works, what doesn't work. When you were doing that inside that and you were trying to do your breakfast machine, were you doing it inside the food truck or was it an experiment? Like I want to know a little bit more about that.
Oh, yeah. So the food truck ended up being all manual. And, you know, I experimented with maybe like doing a pre-order app and that sort of thing. But honestly, the food truck ended up just being a straight up food truck, like 2 big 4-foot griddles and this sort of thing. And, you know, my idea was, oh, I'll get this food truck going and then, you know, start adding the automation over time. And I realized once you've committed yourself to a manual infrastructure, it's super hard to change to the, that's why like so many, you know, incumbents out there are, you know, kind of stuck with what they have. You know, when you look at like a Starbucks or a Dunkin's or something like that, they have so much manual infrastructure. It's hard for them to even think in a way that is like really going to lead them down the path of true automation, right? And we've spoken to them, right? You know, they don't think of their requirements set in a way that is automatable. Like, you know, we get to curate our menu. We aren't tied to our existing equipment. We are tied to our existing buildings, right? So we have a blank sheet of paper when we think about automation. And so we automate things that we know we can automate. And so not having all the constraints of an existing business makes it a lot easier. And that's kind of one of the things I learned from the food truck is if you're going to do it. And like you were saying before with, you know, people trying to, you know, give little solutions. Yeah. A lot of people will encourage us to be B2B, you know, like sell to another company. But unless you own the end-to-end process, unless you, you know, have control over it and you can you're really curate things like your menu down to things that, you know, you can automate, you're never quite going to get there and you're never going to truly have that understanding. I think one of the biggest cheat codes, like Amazon is a great example of this, but the cheat code for having great automation is use your own stuff, right? If you're trying to make automation for somebody else, it's a lot harder to like truly understand the requirements. We understand the requirements super well because like tomorrow we're going to go serve customers directly. We're going to see exactly what slows us down and what customer feedback we get. And that'll go right back into our design. That feedback loop could take months if you're doing a B2B business with somebody else. So for us, it just makes it so much cleaner. And like Jane was saying earlier, the decisions are so much easier because we're not, you know, fighting through, you know, multiple layers of an organization. We're just taking all of the customer, you know, feedback and the way the day went operationally. And we use that to make our decisions on where we put our next efforts.
Jane, talk to me about the first iteration, because obviously you don't just build one and plop one down. What was that like? Was it in your garage? Was it on a trailer? What was it like building like the actual guts of the unit to figure out all the robotics inside of it?
Yeah. So we bootstrapped the pilot, and I think that we knew that it wasn't forever. We didn't have unlimited resources. So what we did is we put all of our money into the tech that was consumer facing. So our vision systems are that, you know, adjust the windows to the right height, our app, which isn't just a straight plain ordering app. There's a lot of like customary detection built into it. But yeah, we did that. And then pretty much Rob built it from hand.
In our driveway.
In our driveway. In 90 degree heat. And he is not like, does not do well with heat.
Do well with heat. Yeah. So it was a hot box for a while.
It was that and like two interns and like that. Yeah, it was them. Straight, like built by hand into a trailer. Which we, there's like a lot of learnings about trailers. It's just how people perceive them. Like, for instance, they think they're, it was a pop-up. They think it's potentially not clean inside. They, like, there's a lot of thoughts around that. Today we're in a shipping container, so totally different and also permanent. But yeah, and then we, found a spot in a, parking lot that wasn't being used alongside a busy road and, negotiated like a really great, rent and then just plopped it there. Like, we pulled it there, we set it up, and we learned a lot about just retail, because neither of us have any background in like retail necessarily. So just like signage, like being, because we had some people who would come in backwards through the drive through. There was just like,
it was hilarious. I mean, they might not have been completely sober, but that definitely happened. Well, and we didn't try to do all the automation from the get-go either. Like, we set up this trailer so that it felt like an automated experience. But really, Jane and I were behind the curtain, like, don't look here, you know, like Wizard of Oz, you know, pushing buttons and making drinks and all that sort of thing, just to prove the product market fit. And it worked, though, like that. We had such an amazing customer reaction that that was enough for us to, you know, have some traction and go raise a pre-seed and then build the fully automated version that we're working on now.
What was that customer feedback from those first days when you were inside going through, you know, adjustable height windows, all that? What was those first initial reactions?
It's pretty consistently people will pull up with their phones out. They're taking pictures. They're like wowed by the experience, because the experience is you order on an app, which isn't that different from like a Starbucks today. But when you drive up, you don't have to scan a QR code. You don't have to talk to anyone. We know who you are already. And then all you have to do is drive up to the window, and the window presents your drinks, and then you just grab and go. So the wow of that is we know who people are, and there's a certain amount of like customers really want to be known and to be seen and heard, right? So they really enjoy the fact that we're, you know, they don't have to give their names, stuff like that. We even played around with like AI generated labels just for fun. Like, people would tell us a few things about themselves in the app, and then we would generate something for them.
We have so fun with like, that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like we're a little bit of like a personalized experience, because we know that. Because we were like, okay, how much are people going to accept that it's automated? Well, that, you know, the idea of automated. And so, yeah, we got a lot of wow reactions, which helped us, like, we're like, okay, like, this is going to work. Product market fit is there. And we had lots of repeat customers, and people actually hated, like, sometimes Rob would go out there and just talk to a customer, like, just to see, like, get reactions, feedback. And they didn't like that at all. Like, they wanted it to be magical, humanless experience, which was really interesting to us.
Yeah, they didn't like that there was a guy in the box. Like, it's okay, like, because now we do site hosting. So, like, if you stand outside and just, you know, if somebody needs help or they're new, then, you know, we will. But if they see you come out of the box, like, that ruins the magic. It was like,
Okay.
Box. Like, there's nothing really happened. And so now that, you know, we can leave the door closed and the robots are making the drinks, now they're like, this is real. This is like the future. And I think that's just much more exciting for them.
Yeah. So anyway, so I think that what I really like, our early adopters obviously are embracing of technology. And so they really like want it to work and love. And they're like, where has this been? So, and that's really positive and encouraging.
Yeah.
So how does that work then? There's nobody in the box, but between like restocking, checking equipment, sanitation, like there's so many like intricate things in the food industry that usually require human intervention to fix, update, change. How does that all work? I mean, you've got ice for ice beverages because you're not doing just coffee. You've got, you know, different types of drinks and refresher type stuff. How does that all work with, again, refilling, or is that all still kind of automated and someone just kind of comes up and hooks up a bunch of milk, or how does that work?
Yeah, we're still, you know, that's still an evolving process for us. So, you know, all the like order fulfillment is automated, but all the prep for it is not yet, right? That's all very manual. And it's actually, you know, the jobs that we'll have for people is to, you know, stock these things and all that sort of thing. But yeah, we fill all of our containers at the commissary. That's where all the cleaning happens and all that sort of thing. So we fill all of our containers. We bring them over to the system. You know, we restock the ice. We replace, you know, all the empty containers once a day and, you know, make sure it's nice and clean and wipe everything down. But yeah, that's something that will evolve, and you know, we're working on that process, making it smoother and smoother. But the good thing is, we designed this thing to be easy to maintain and easy to restock every day. Like we've thought about scale, you know, from the beginning, and so you know, there's a bunch of racks in there that you can slide out, and you just pop in your new containers and pop out the new ones. And you know, we want this to be something that can be, you know, flipped in about 30 minutes, and it can be done off cycle. Like, you know, you just basically back your van up to this pod, and the two doors slide open, and you go, and then you're in and out. So, but you know, you do it a piece at a time. You know, you do the pieces that make sense for the scale that we're at, and eventually that will become, you know, more and akin to the hub and spoke model that eventually, you know, we'll be driving towards. So next year, when we build three more pods, then they'll really prove out all of our operational concept of, you know, that hub that we have now is just supporting one pod, but eventually it'll support four. And long term, we want one hub to be able to support 10 pods.
No, I think the idea is genius. When I saw it, I was like, this just makes total sense. I'm one of those people that I'll take Chick-fil-A, for example. The one by us actually has like the mobile drive through. So there's two lines. There's the line you go and you have to place your order and wait. And the line is usually like 30 people back. Or there's the one where I just go on. I place my order. It saves all my stuff. And then as I get close, it's like, oh, we know you're there. I mean, there's still the QR you have to scan, which you guys eliminated that. And I want to talk about the whole geofencing, because I think that is genius. But I can scan that code. I just pull right up to the window, and then sure enough, like, you know, obviously depending on what we order, it takes a few minutes and I get my stuff, and everybody's still in line waiting. And I'm like, why aren't people using this mobile drive through? I don't know. Do they want to tell a person? I personally think that it's easier to, like, if I plug it all in, the chances of things getting screwed up are going to be a lot less. Yeah. You know, when you're talking into a microphone, that human, I hate to say it, but the human piece of it is that you say, I want three pumps of vanilla. They put six. And then now all of a sudden you're ruined for the day, especially if you drive away or you haven't tried it. And then you've gone a little bit down the road and you've sipped on something and you're like, damn it. I just paid $12 for this drink. It's not what I wanted, but you're not going to go back because it's more of a hassle, inconvenience to wait, tell someone, hey, I screwed up.
Yeah.
With AI automation, I mean, it's going to be exactly what it needs. So let's talk about how the geofencing works, how the technology is when somebody places, I think it's really cool. I don't want to steal the thunder of how the whole magic works.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. And so one of the key things that we had to prove during the pilot to make sure all the, because, you know, part of a startup being successful is you have to show up at the right time. You can't be too early. You can't be too late. And so at this point in time, people are pretty accepting of downloading an app, placing their order on it, and sharing their location. Right. And so we verified that during our pilot. But, you know, basically telling everybody, it's like, you must download the app to order. That's part of the process. Sorry, like, it's not an option, right? And so I think it's a little challenging for existing restaurants, again, to like try to, you know, continue with their legacy offerings and say, yes, you can order on site, or you could do the app download, whereas like we, you know, we make everybody download the app. But there's a huge benefit to it right now. So once you download that app and you share your location, you know, geofences aren't anything new, but, you know, geofence, okay, it's a great trigger for us to start, either start your order or start to look for you on our beacons. But our real key piece of technology is, the sensor augmented geofence. And so the problem with GPS is it's not accurate enough to be able to tell that you are the next person in line. It can tell us that you're close to the site, okay, you know, start making the order. That's all interesting. But if you really want to be able to, you know, perfect the drive-through, you need to be able to figure out who's in which car. And so that requires a higher level of fidelity. So you need more accurate sensors. So we have short range sensors on site that, you know, your phone will also, you leave your Bluetooth on and these sensors will triangulate you and we'll be able to figure out if you're in the car or if you're in a car with somebody else that ordered. And so we'll serve those orders at the same time. And so that's like the real key unlock for us to be able to do this is to not only understand that you're close to the site, but, you know, be able to do all that queuing automatically. And that's how you're able to take that 3 minutes that you have to wait with the QR code and actually turn it into like, no, you just drive up, you grab it and you go.
Oh, I will say too that it allows us to do things like during our pilot, we could tell when someone in front of the window had like multiple orders. Like there was once two girls showed up, they had four phones with them, all four different orders.
Yeah.
You can send all of them out at once, right? And they don't have to talk to anyone, let anyone know that. So I think that's a key differentiator in terms of speed of service and then also like just like customer recognition.
How many drinks can like with that window spins around, how many drinks can it actually like hold or sit? So when somebody places an order, if you know, sometimes offices place big orders and it's 6-8 drinks, how many can actually come out of the little pickup?
We can fit four in the tray and then we have two trays, right? So we could do technically up to 8. It's not really the case that we were designing for. You know, we're not designing for a bustable and,
right.
and that sort of thing. But now, could you do it? Yes, it would slow the whole process down a bit. But we really designed it. On average, we get 2 drinks per order. Like, that's the average. And so, you know, we wanted to be able to do 2 orders. And so that's why we sized the window that we sized. So, you know, I think eventually we'll probably have to do some sort of larger order system. So, you know, and higher, you know, population density areas when you're close to a lot of offices, we'll probably come up with something that can accommodate, you know, large pickups and, you know, big door dashes and all that sort of thing as well.
Yeah. But the ultimate guide that we operate by is always about speed, like maximizing speed. Because that's like what everyone cares about. So like that has to be what we define everything by.
Yeah.
Let's talk about product. You're using Colmatier, correct? And they're the frozen pucks. Mm-hmm. So what was the decision behind going frozen pucks, going with that brand, quality? Because obviously you could have the greatest model in the world, but if the product sucks, people aren't going to, they're just not going to drink it. They're not going to want it. So what was the decisions when you were sourcing, trying to figure out the exact products for your brand with the providers?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. If the drinks suck, no one is coming. So when we say product is number one, like we mean drinks as product. When we were looking at coffee, there were a lot of things that drew us to Colmatier. So we know that if you automate coffee, people think it tastes disgusting or they just like don't really like it. And so we wanted to get over that barrier of adoption so that people would try us at least. And so when we found out about Colmatier, they, for anyone who doesn't know, they do like a premium flash frozen pre-brew of coffee. They come today in little aluminum cups. That's like their direct-to-consumer business. We get them in bag and box. But essentially, it's just like really delicious. You can like really taste all the different like notes of coffee. It's kind of like wine tasting, but for coffee. And they do just a really great job. And I think that was really key. The other thing about it is it comes as an extract. So we're not brewing on site. We don't have really expensive specialty machines within the pod and like some robotic arm pushing buttons. Like that's not what we're about. It's really about just getting everything directly into the cup. And that's what we can do with this extract because all we have to do is add the liquid and then we don't have any waste, right? So the pod can now be off sewer, off water. We don't need those. We only need a power hookup. And the coffee is delicious. And because it's such a high concentrate of TDS, which is total dissolved solution, solvents, I forget.
Yeah.
It allows us to really maximize the storage capacity in there. So there's like so many benefits to using Colmatier, and not only because it's really delicious.
Yeah, I hear a lot more on the flash frozen pucks. It seems to be a conversation that's starting to pick up a lot more about, to your point, brewed fresh. It's frozen at its peak. It's kind of like vegetables, right? If you get frozen vegetables, everyone thinks they're gross and everything else, but it's like those vegetables are actually picked at their peak, flash frozen, so they're probably in its best form, even better than what you're getting fresh, you know, from going to the produce, unless you're, you know, like on the West Coast where farmers markets are putting out stuff literally picked, you know, that day. Product definitely plays a big piece. What about the menus? How big, you know, that's one of the big issues with, I see with some of the big players, Starbucks, Dunkin's, the menus are so freaking big. There's so much customization that it just makes your head spin. And I get that there's that certain customer. And to me, I say just that's where you go. But what did you put into the planning of how big is the menu going to be? How many options do we put per drink, you know, with all the different flavorings and things you can add or remove? What was the thought process on the whole menu design?
Yeah, we optimize for speed. So we don't have, for example, anything that, again, going back to speed, but we don't have anything that's powder, for example. Like, it's really hard to automate powder. So even though we know matcha is a big selling drink ingredient, we don't have that today. Maybe eventually we've tried lots of different concentrates, but we haven't found anything that we thought was really super good. There is rules like that, right? Everything we want to make has to be something that is a bestseller at any other coffee shop because it's going to be curated. We have to have a curated menu. And we want it to be a popular drink that is of high quality ingredients, is delicious, that people would want to stop less than a minute for, right? So that's one thinking. We do offer a broad spectrum, though, of drinks, right? Because we're not reliant on, like, specialty machines. So we can offer, like, a wide variety of categories, like the teas, lemonades, refreshers, coffees. Even during our pilot, in the trailer, we were testing categories like dirty sodas, right? But, like, interestingly enough, dirty sodas aren't a known thing in New England. Like, people don't really know.
Really?
Yeah, it takes a little bit of education. Yeah. Even Italian sodas, you'd be surprised. Yeah. So it's just like thinking about stuff like that and what goes into the cup. So, yeah.
I'm laughing back here because, like, this is a great example of why it shouldn't just be technology people, you know, developing robotics, right? Because if it were up to me, we'd have like four things. You know, that's about it, because that would be easy to automate, right? And like, that's an easy, it's like, oh, I'll just get four of the best things, like seven brew. They only started with seven drinks. It's a seven brew, right? So like, you know, we're automated, so we can just do four or something. And so Jane, you know, being like very, you know, customer focused and product focused, forced us to come up with a system that can have we'd have over 50 ingredients in our pod, right? So and we're able to do that by, you know, standardizing on liquid dispensing and those sort of things. But I think having that, you know, voice of the customer, the less focus on the technology and more of like the technology we have is just to solve for the customer experience, right? To create the customer experience that we're trying to generate. And I think that, you know, approach has really made it, you know, something that is going to succeed as opposed to, you know, something that's like, that's an amazing robot. It sucks, but it's amazing. You know, it doesn't meet, you know, customer needs. And so it's just a great example of that. Yeah. Every time we talk about how wide our menu is.
I know. And I don't know, like we test things all the time and fail. And this might be one of those places where down the line we're like, oh, that was a mistake, we should have started off with seven. But I think that my thinking is that coffee shops today, as our competitors, already offer a huge menu, and it's still curated, right? And it's like burritos or any other like Mexican food. The ingredients are all very similar, but they make different dishes. And so that's really what we're doing, is optimizing the number of dishes we can make or drinks by using a lot of the same ingredients, so they work double time for us.
And I think someday this is like one of the cool, okay, you know, we're getting all the base features working and all this, but, you know, we would, and a lot of people use AI a lot, and I think they whitewash things with AI, right? You know, and say, oh, this is AI, you know, to make. Most of what people are saying is AI is just programming, it's software, right? And so all the base functions, like, you don't want to trust a large language model to make sure that you don't get milk in your drink if you're lactose intolerant. Like it's just not that kind of reliable. So that's just programming. But in the future, I think there's some exciting opportunities of using AI to actually curate this menu even further or customize it even further to your needs, right? Because now you can take all those ingredients and create something that you know you're going to enjoy. You can dial the menu up and down to your particular flavor profile, your sweetness level, all that sort of thing, and even create drinks that have never existed before. Like maybe you add a couple drops of lavender or a couple milliliters of lavender to something that you've never added to it before. So I think the ability to take all these ingredients and be able to dispense them quickly and very precisely will actually open up a huge number of opportunities to customize drinks in the future.
That is true. Yeah. So even with the limited menu, we can still customize and personalize drinks. So for example, in the afternoons, we have one customer who comes by and he's like, I like the energy drinks a lot, but I wish I could, like, based on the day and how I'm feeling energy wise, like dial up or down the energy shot. Like I can control the caffeine because I track it in my health app.
Or connect the app and like I want to use up the rest of my allocation in this drink. Yeah. How cool would that be?
Yeah. So like you don't ever do it on caffeine. But yeah, so like people are looking for that level of customization. And that's something that robotics can do.
Yeah, you talk software and I saw a term in doing some of the research. You know, everyone hears a SaaS, right? Software as a service. Yeah. But I heard RAS, robotics as a service. What does that mean? It's the first time I've heard it, and I thought about it, and I was like, kind of makes sense, but what to you is robotics as a service?
So when people think of franchises, a typical franchise, you would come up with an operational process, you would come up with all the branding and all that sort of thing, but you're not just handing off a brand for somebody to use, you're handing off an entire process, right? And here are the ingredients you're going to use, here's how you're going to cook them, like all that sort of thing. And so for us, our franchise would be a little bit different because, we'll have these pods that we'll make, with the robots inside, but the franchisees will never have to go inside of those pods. So we'll do all the refitting, we'll do all the robotics maintenance. And so that's the robotics as a service. Now we're providing this robot service and you have to, as a franchisee, just get people to the site. And, we'll obviously have some, marketing and branding things. And this pod, it'll be the brightest, most interesting looking thing, probably wherever you put it. So, that alone has actually worked super well for us. Like when we open up for testing for, the couple hours a day that we do it, people just start funneling it, right? Like we haven't even really pushed our social or done any sort of, marketing. Our CAC is super low because we give away a free drink when you download and then you're in, right? That I think is, super exciting. But the RAS part of it, yeah, it's definitely just us, maintaining all of that maintenance and resupply and being able to make sure that every time you go to a pod, you have the exact same, drink experience.
Yeah, I mean, that for an operator or franchisee, which is leading in my next question, that's got to be just kind of like a mental, relief of like, I don't have to worry about the robots. I don't have to worry about a service repair company. I don't have to figure out somebody to try and fix this.
Yeah.
You guys know what you're doing. You know how it runs. Something's a major issue. I have someone there to fix it. Yeah. Talk about your franchising model, because I thought when I heard it, I was like, that makes a lot of sense on how you're approaching it and how you're opening it up to the average person. So maybe dig into that.
I think the closer we get to actually being able to implement this, and as like the everything is starting to mature in terms of the model, the more we love it, because at the end of the day, this is going to become like a middle class wealth generation franchise, which I think is amazing. Like for people like us that have some money and a lot of motivation to actually be able to own something and to grow it, I think is super exciting, because the way it'll work is the franchisee will find the site, so that they know their town best. They'll be able to take those requirements in. You need 10 to 14 parking spaces. You need power. You don't need water. You don't need sewer. You need good ingress and egress in a parking lot, right? So, you'll probably take those things later and be like, oh, that's a great spot for a ping pong. That, you'll be able to figure that out. And so the franchisees will bring the site. They'll bring the CapEx for us to build the pod. And so we can build a pod for $125K, which means we can offer it for $150, and then there's probably less than $50K of other site preparation and all that sort of thing. So for under $200K of pre-opening costs, you could have a fully functional ping pod, and we'll operate it. We'll do the restocking. You don't have to learn robotics. At the end of the day, it becomes a profit share. And And we think, you know, within a, you know, 2 to 3 years, this thing can pay back. You can grow, you can put that, you know, back into other pods. And I think the real cool thing too is this method allows robotics to do what they're good at. Fulfillment, very accurate, typically is 15% to 20% of order and accuracy, like the, you know, the 6 pumps versus the 3, like all that really just kind of goes away. And then people get to do what people are good at. So one of the things that we learned through our testing is the site host can be a great, you know, face of the brand to the customer. And some people just want to hear the story. Some people just need a minute, you know, to like have a quick interaction. But then now, like with all the automation happening, you're doing a quick check to make sure everything's all set, you know, if they've already ordered, and you get to have a quick little conversation and you get to really focus on them. And, you know, it's cool how we're starting to build real bonds with our customers around. Well, one nice lady the other day brought me a fresh asparagus from her farm stand, which is really, really tasty. I don't know if you like asparagus, but it's super good. And so, you know, just, you know, you get to enjoy those moments and now it's not just you're throwing out this big old vending machine that, you know, is trying to, you know, replace something else. It's more about like now you have this connection to the community, you're offering this great service, you know, more people can get served because, you know, when Jane was looking at the original business case, 30% of people that wanted a drink in the morning see a long line and they just ditch. Like so many customers just don't get served in the morning. That's an $8 billion opportunity. But also like think about the people that don't actually get what they wanted because of the inefficiency of the drive-thru. So fixing that means we get to serve just so many more people.
Well, and I'm even thinking not just like big metropolitan. I come from a tiny, tiny little farm town. When I do certain business trips and I decide to drive, I'm going through a ton of little towns. You have to get off the interstate and there's nowhere to get coffee. It's McDonald's. And to be blunt, that's just not my cup of Joe, if you will.
Yeah.
So I'm just like imagining like one of these being, you know, somewhere readily available that as people are passing by, like, oh my God, I can actually get a cup of coffee that's designed to be a good cup of coffee or, you know, other beverage. And I've started to recognize the brand, how impactful that could be to like a smaller community. It's like, as you said, the robotics is doing the work, but you could still have a face to that brand, to that pod. And people know, okay, hey, no, we're not just, you know, supporting the AI initiative. We're supporting our local community because it's somebody in our community that's put one of these in. So I think it would open up a lot of doors to some smaller, not fully rural, but, you know, these smaller towns that are 20,000, 30,000 people. And the only real good coffee shops are ones you have to go in and wait an exorbitant amount of time, or it's a McDonald's or whoever has a fast drive through to get that stuff. So I think that's a really cool, still human connection to the whole process and not just a completely hands off. Oh, there's just this random box sitting on the side of the road and I'm going to order coffee from it. What? I don't get that. But if Joe, the farmer, is like, hey, I got one of these coffee, you know, machines, people are going to be like, let me go give it a try. And then it talks, but I digress. That's just a really cool thought process. And I do think about, you know, you're talking about it and I saw the footprint of it, how empty parking lots where I live in the Chicago area, there's tons of just random empty parking lots of like Kohl's that closed down. This, you know, shop has just shut down and it's just a massive space that realistically probably isn't going to get retrofitted anytime soon because of how big it is. But they have these massive parking lots that are just sitting there and traffic's constantly going by. But what's the first thing, you know, like my wife, she's like, where's the Kohl's Starbucks? Oh my God, it's out of the way versus being right on the path. So I think that's really cool. What's, you know, 2 years from now, where is Ping going? What's the future? You know, you're going to obviously franchising, getting more of these out into the wild because you guys are only in the New England area, right?
Today, yeah. Our first location is in Hudson, New Hampshire, with plans to expand in this region. And then we might look at other states to franchise too. But yeah, like I think that, well, for one thing, just to kind of tag on to what you were just saying, you know, in rural areas and also in the suburbs, eventually our end state is 24/7. We want to be able to serve someone a drink at 2 a.m. if they wanted it. And I think that it is a business model that not only serves suburban, but like rural areas, like you were saying, really well. The ability to grab something at like a again. 2 a.m. in the morning is really great.
And plus, eventually, we want to add packaged snacks, convenience items. So, like, if you need something, you know, diapers or something like that, you know, why do you have to? I grew up in Loudoun, New Hampshire. There's, like, not a 24/7 anywhere, right? You know, so if you needed something, you had to drive, like, a good 20, 30 minutes to get to a store that would be open, you know, after 9 p.m. And so, no, I think that's super exciting.
Yeah.
Well, it makes a lot of sense now that I think about it. Industrial, there's a lot of industrial in those smaller areas, but there's thousands of workers that go to the factories, do the overnight shift, and there's nothing for them to have something available that's still high quality. I think you definitely are hitting the nail on the head there.
Thanks.
Yeah. But I think, see that question of where we want to be in a couple of years.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we're going to do 3 more pods next year that we'll be on.
Okay.
We're going to get our process as solid as possible. So, like, you know, once the robotics become boring, it's an operations and logistics challenge, right? And so getting that process solid is super important. And then in 2028, that's when we're going to start our franchise model and start to, you know, expand more in this region, and then start to look in other areas. We're looking close to California, you know, Florida. We have a paid franchisee wait list. And so they're from all over. We have people in Australia and Canada, you know, so, you know, that I think is as quickly as possible, we want to be ready to be able to scale. And so everything we're doing now is to make that happen, make sure we can, you know, stamp these pods out as quickly as possible and contract manufacturers that our software can scale, our dashboards, our logistics, like all of that is, you know, something that we're not thinking about doing. Oh, we'll do 2 or 3 of these and then we've done. No, we're going to do thousands of these pods. And we think that way with every part of our design and you know, every, you know, future looking decision that we make. So, we're 2 years is going to look way different than like 3 years and then 4. Like it's going to hockey stick pretty quickly because that's exactly the plan that we have.
And I think that with our small footprint, our goal has always been to be on every street corner that somebody wants to buy a coffee at. And I think that's because like a lot of people are, oh, you know, like we have Dunkin's and Starbucks already. There's a lot of brands. It's very competitive. Yes. And then people think that people are really loyal to brands. We found in our experience that the number one decision maker for where people end up buying is oftentimes location. Just like, can I get it to it? Is it close to my house? I think you mentioned that earlier. Yeah. So I think like, you know, the expansion plan is to be available to people that want it.
Because we don't need the amount of density that like a big coffee shop would need, like Dunkin's.
Right.
They need to sell like 500 or 600 cups of coffee a day just to break even. We need to sell between 115 and 125, right? So we can be in way less dense areas and still be very, very profitable, which I think is really cool too. Now we can get much closer to the customers. You don't have to drive, you know, all the way from Loudoun, New Hampshire into Concord, New Hampshire to get, you know, like you can get something much closer to where you live and just make it so much more convenient.
Well, not even where you live. I was just thinking back to, I have some relatives that live in Colorado and they're outside of Denver. And as we were coming back, I was like, where can I get some caffeine? Like, I obviously don't know the local places, what's good, what's not good. And I just need something because I'm getting ready to drive for, you know, 12 hours with my children in the back. I just need coffee, period, in the story. But I had to like find a place, go out of my way, circle around, get it, go back, get back to the main road. And I was like, sometimes it's just like, it's not even worth it. I'll just deal with, you know, whatever I've got in the car and just go along. But if there was something convenient right there, I'm going to stop there. I'm going to get it, give it a try. And to your point, if it's good, guess what? Then I'm going to be kind of loyal to that. If I see that, I'm going to go, oh, there's one in the area that I'm at, let me go stop there because I know it's probably going to be on my way.
You know, it's funny. A few months ago, I went looking for a bottle of water someplace. Like, I forget where we were driving, but, and the only thing around were grocery stores. And so I went into a larger grocery store and I had to wander around for like a few minutes before I finally found a bottle of Dasani that I could buy for $3.50. You know, I thought it was crazy that like how difficult it was just to get a bottle of water. And, and so one of the things we sell is just water. Like you could have, you know, nice sparkling fresh water with, you know, some ice in it, maybe a little flavoring for a couple of bucks. Right. And so it'd be super convenient. What was it, $2.50 for our Italian sodas or something?
Yeah,
So.
I think we haven't really mentioned that, even though we offer really high quality ingredients and like we want things to be delicious, we also wanted to offer them at reasonable prices, just understanding that people are more price conscious these days and kind of feeling the crunch. And so our Italian sodas, for example, do start at $2.50. So like we believe that's really reasonable, and then go all the way up for like more specialty drinks at $6.50.
Yeah. And robots don't need
that's
tips.
Still super.
Robots don't need tips. And
I was going to say no tips, shaming someone for not tipping. And then two, just waste in general. People don't know like the amount of milk and just general waste that there is, because you can never get it spot on. You can only heat milk up so many times. You know, you see the baristas fill up the frothing pitchers, and it's like, well, you can only heat that up so many times until that milk scorches and it's going to taste really bad.
Yeah.
So how much are they just dumping? You see it all over the counter. It's everywhere. And it's like, well, of course they have to charge so much because they have to account for human error and waste. And with robotics, you don't. It's going to be exactly what you need every time. So you know your cogs, like, in and out. There is no question. And you can really dial in that pricing. I'm glad you brought that up. Before we wrap this up, I got to mention WeFunder. I believe you're doing a WeFunder round right now. So maybe explain what that is and why you're doing that versus something like a Series A.
Yeah, I mean, we found that a ton of our customers wanted to invest when we were running the pilot. And there was at that time, we were like, well, when we were raising our pre-seed, we were only talking to accredited investors.
Well, you're only allowed to take money from accredited investors. Yeah, so... It felt wrong saying it's like, sorry, you're not wealthy enough to invest in us, even though you're a customer, right? So that's, I think, what got us into the crowd, like even starting to look at the crowdfunding to begin with.
Yeah. And I think that like a lot of his robotics network was like just stoked that we were building something that was like consumer facing and that just like really made sense. And the market was really calling for it. So there's a lot of our investors are also like engineers and roboticists and things like that. That was the catalyst for the WeFunder. We are closing it out in a few weeks. It's been really great. And the next step for us is to go out and raise a seed round so that we can get to the next three pods.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I know we're coming up on time. You guys are everywhere on socials. I love how you're building that community. You guys check out their YouTube channel. They have their own mini podcast, or I guess it is a full podcast. They talk about these topics. They dive deep about like why them versus Starbucks, the actual like engineering behind it, like why they're doing what they're doing. So they really get in depth. And, you know, today is just scratching the surface, touching some things so you guys could really find them. But they're all over different socials, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok. But their YouTube channel is really, really awesome. So we'll put links to all of that into the show notes. So Jane, Rob, thank you so much for your time today. And until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.